Welcome to Real GM Radio. I'm Daniel LaRue, your host, and so happy to have you with us for this episode. I wanted to talk about the NBA draft. The timing seemed right, even though we're in the middle of the playoffs, because the lottery just happened, and I wanted to talk to Sam Vecenie. He's a very talented writer, writes for CBS Sports. He does NBA draft, college basketball, and the NBA, so it's a great combination for this kind of work. And we talked about the top guys, we talked about some guys he likes in the late lottery, middle of the draft, and a lot of stuff also in terms of fit and how these guys can play together and play with established players in the league. Conversation runs about an hour. I really enjoyed it, and I'll let you get to it. Thanks so much for coming on.
Oh, absolutely.
I think that a good place to start is at the top, and instead of talking, you know, about who each team's going to take, though I will like to get to that, do you see Towns and Okafor as kind of a step above the other, the guard prospects?
That's a good question. I do. I think that there are basically three tiers once you get into that top 10 range. I think that you're talking Towns and Okafor on their own. I think they're not transcendent big man prospects, but they're really good ones. They're going to be great prospects for whoever gets them. Moutier and Russell also, I think that they're both all-star level talents. Like, I would be surprised if, like, neither of them played in an all-star game eventually. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. They're just very talented. Moutier is a great athlete, very strong for his age. Russell is almost preternaturally skilled. Like, he sees things before they happen on the floor. It's incredible. And then after that, you have the guys that, you know, they have more question marks around them. Like, Justice Winslow, can he develop into enough of a scorer to be a two-way star? Or is he just going to be like a strong defensive role player that, you know, ends up being a starter in the NBA, but not really like an all-star level talent? Willie Cauley-Stein, you know, can he ever bring enough offense to jump into that echelon? Can he become Tyson Chandler, or his hands not good enough to even be strong enough in the pick and roll to really make a mark offensively in any way? Hezonja and Porzingis, they're both very talented. They both come with their own sort of question marks. Porzingis around his body, Hezonja around, can he fit into a team situation given his, you know, just general confidence level, which is, you know, greater than just about anything I've ever seen. And then you're looking at like your Stanley Johnsons, Miles Turners, Kelly Oubre's, all of whom project as like solid starters, but you don't know that they have like the high-end upside to get into that all-star level talent either. So, you know, I would say that Towns and Okafor are above all of those guys. You know, Okafor has flaws, but his skill in the post, it comes around once in a decade. It's incredible. Like, he's got incredible footwork. He has incredible touch around the rim. His face-up game is strong. He can handle the ball really well. His hands are incredible. They're massive. And his vision is incredible out of the post. Like, everything you could want in an offensive post player, Jahlil Okafor is that. And I think that's what makes him on Towns' level.
Yeah, what's so fascinating about Okafor is that there isn't a direct parallel in the modern NBA. You know, there are guys who've done similar things in other generations. And so one of the kind of big talking points that you hear around the league is, oh, you know, there it's the death of the traditional center. And my personal opinion on that is that the reason that happens is because nobody has the right combination of abilities on the offensive end to make it work. That's why I'm so excited about Okafor, is that he'll be the test case. I think if anyone can work as a true back-to-the-basket center now, Okafor is our best shot.
Mm-hmm. And here's the thing, like, he's not crazy dissimilar to what DeMarcus Cousins was coming out of Kentucky. He's better than Cousins was coming out of Kentucky. He's a lot more polished. Cousins might have had like a little bit more maybe explosiveness, but he's a lot more polished than Cousins was. He is the same length. They both have like near 7'5 wingspans. They're both like right in that 6'10, 6'11 range. They're not crazy dissimilar prospects. It's just that Okafor, you don't really have to worry about the temperamentalness. Like, I don't think Cousins is necessarily a cancer. He's a bad guy or anything, but he's temperamental, I think, is the best way to put it. Cousins had the same questions coming in defensively, and he's turned into a pretty solid, I would say. He's probably like a league average defensive center at this point. He's not a great one, but, and he's probably a guy that you need to pair with a rim protector, but his offense is just so strong. His rebounding ability is so strong. He's a really good passer that if you have to pair him with a rim protector, you do that at that point, you know?
Yeah, that's definitely an interesting parallel. I was so high on Cousins when he came out. For me, partially, I always liked his defensive instincts, even though the production wasn't necessarily there. One question I have with Okafor is his rebounding. Do you think that that will come around a little bit? Because from what I recall, it wasn't particularly strong for a guy with his talent.
It wasn't great. It's worth remembering that Amile Jefferson is a pretty good rebounder from the power forward spot in college. Justice Winslow is a very good rebounder from, he played a little bit of four, a little bit of three. He's very good at crashing the boards from that side. So I wouldn't be totally worried about Okafor. He profiles well on that, well in that skill level. He has great hands. He has massive hands. He's a long wingspan. He knows how to box people out. He takes up a ton of space just due to his frame. He has good instincts. I wouldn't be super worried about his rebounding. He might not develop into a Cousins level rebounder where he's grabbing 13 a game, but I think that he probably will be like a 10 rebound a game guy.
Switching over to Towns, the other number one possibility guy. With Towns, the fascination for me is that he could potentially play both big man positions and do that defensively, which is a very different thing from the guys who slide between the two more as an offensive player. And that also makes him super useful for a team like Minnesota or like the Lakers that don't have a ton of big man building pieces. Randall, obviously, you hope that he gets there. And, you know, same thing with Jang and Pekovic and guys like that that the Wolves have. But you can add a lot of different pieces around a guy like Towns and make it work.
I'm less excited about Towns playing the four in the NBA, actually, than a lot of people are.
That's fair.
I think that's probably a minority view. But his coordination in small areas kind of concerns me. If you watch him on the perimeter, he moves fine. You know, if he's guarding the pick and roll, he's pretty okay. But if you watch him in small spaces, like when he's making these little rotations across the lane, when he has to help or, you know, things of that ilk, he gets a little bit off balance from time to time, and it leads to fouls is the thing. He had averaged almost 6 fouls per 40 minutes in college this season. And part of that is due to the fact that he could be so aggressive defensively. Just because of what Kentucky had. Kentucky had Dakari Johnson behind him. They had Marcus Lee behind him. They obviously had Willie Cauley-Stein next to him. So he could afford to be a little bit more aggressive defensively, but at the same time, it wasn't, a lot of his fouls didn't seem like that. A lot of his fouls seemed like he got a little bit off balance and just kind of hacked him with the body or hacked him with the arm coming down. And that's something that might continue to get better as he grows older. And, you know, just continues to mature into his body. He goes from being 19 to 20 to, you know, 25. You're obviously, if you're that tall, you're going to get a lot more coordinated as you grow. The concerns are there, though, is my point. And I wouldn't want him guarding fours in the NBA. And that's kind of why I think his rookie season might end up being a little bit disappointing. But the other thing is, that's basically the only flaw I can see in his game, and it's a pretty marginal flaw. He is a guy that he kind of does everything offensively. He can go into the post. He can play in the pick and roll. He can pop. He can roll to the basket. I don't think he can really shoot NBA threes yet, but he can get out to probably 20 feet and shoot. He's going to knock down his free throws. There was a point last season from February to like maybe the end of March, I would say it was going into the NCAA tournament, where he knocked down like 90% of his like 60 free throws that he took in that time. It was really incredible. And then defensively, he can protect the rim. He's long enough. He's strong enough. He's got good enough instincts when blocking shots that, you know, it's going to be tough to finish over him once he gets that movement down. So you're talking about a very minimally flawed prospect overall. And I think that's what makes Towns so interesting.
And all that minimally flawed part and also his offensive versatility is why I like him so much more as a center, because he forces other teams out of their comfort zone. Because if you, let's say you're facing Marc Gasol and the Grizzlies, who do you put on him? How do you use him? How do you defend a team that can do that? And what's something we've seen from the Warriors this year is they fiddled around with Draymond Green at the five to basically to put everybody around. And what that does is it opens up space for drivers. And if you can do that with somebody who can protect the rim and has legit center size, that's almost a game breaker in the modern NBA if you put him with the right coach.
Exactly. And this is something that I think we're going to start to see more of in the draft overall. I think we're going to see more of these five guys who can go out into at least like the 18-foot range and knock down shots. I think we're starting to see it more already. In this draft alone, we have Karl Towns, Kristaps Porzingis, Bobby Portis, you know.
Miles Turner,
yeah. Like, there are a lot of guys that can really step out and knock down that shot and have potential to at least protect the rim. Next year, you have Skala Bissier, who's going to be at Kentucky. He's probably going to be the number one overall pick in 2016. He's a guy that profiles like that, too. So I think it's going to be a thing that we start seeing more of, actually, on the college level and going into the NBA. These guys that can really become that modern five, like stretch, like pseudo stretch five. I don't know, they're all going to be like 3-point shooting fives, but you know, guys like LaMarcus Aldridge that can really stretch the floor out and you know, be able to protect the rim minimally at least. Aldridge isn't great at that part, but his ability to stretch the floor, you know, just creates so many more passing or driving lanes for Damian Lillard.
And the guy who has the stretch part but not necessarily the five is Frank Kaminsky. Who, yeah. I originally, when I was watching him in college, I was a little bit skeptical of him as a pro, but as I've been watching more and as I've been watching some of his workout material and everything that I've been able to see, I'm starting to get him more and starting to figure out how he's going to fit in the league, and I'm getting more excited for it because also I heard him, I think it was Draft Express had a video where he talked about how he sees himself as a stretch four, which was very interesting because I don't think anybody ever saw him as a rim protector. And if he has the defensive ability to defend fours, that changes how you can play another guy with him.
Yeah. Right now, I think there are concerns about playing him at four just because he doesn't have great defensive fundamentals yet. Wisconsin was one of the worst pick and roll defensive teams in the NCAA last year. A lot of it was due to Kaminsky. Some of it was due to their guards not being great after Trayvon Jackson went down. But Kaminsky was part of a problem. He stands straight up. He doesn't really move well yet on the perimeter. But he has the athletic fluidity to where if you could get him to really get down in the defensive stance and, you know, bend his knees and, you know, get his arms out, you know, he could reasonably become a pretty solid pick and roll defender, and he could play the four. But for now, I don't think he's going to be able to do that. He's going to need some work defensively to be able to get there. But you're absolutely right. Like, if you look at what his skill set is, it's remarkable. His three-point shooting, he shot like 42% from three this year. That's not the best part of his game. The best part of his game is the ability to attack closeouts. If you close out even the slightest bit off balance on him, he dribbles like he's a guard. I mean, he can get into the lane with ease, and he has terrific touch once he gets into that 15-foot range. He has this really nice, you know, over his left shoulder right-handed hook shot that it's very difficult to stop, and he's almost 7'1". It's going to be really, really difficult to guard him in the NBA, even if he can't defend. He's going to be a very good offensive player in the NBA, in my opinion.
The place that I'm really hoping gets him is the Jazz. I think that you could play him with Favors, you could play him with Gobert, and you're just going to have a versatile unit that teams would just struggle with.
That's a very intriguing fit. I've had him going a pick later, actually, to the Suns in most of my mock drafts. That's another place where he would fit perfectly. He'd replace what Channing Frye brought them last year, or not last year, in 2013-14. But yeah, you're absolutely right. The Jazz would be an incredible spot for him because if you played him next to Gobert, because Gobert's just a monster overall, he does everything well defensively, that would hide a lot of what his problems are. And it would give them a little bit more space. You wouldn't have to play Favors and Gobert together a lot, I don't think. And they could really use more depth on their forward line. I think I've even had them getting Kevon Looney a couple times in my mock drafts. Like, they could use more depth in that forward line, and he would really provide them with a different dimension that they don't have right now.
Since we're on the Jazz, my crazy dream scenario for them, and I'm not, this isn't like somebody who covers them, it's somebody who likes watching them, is that they somehow end up with Kaminsky and RJ Hunter. Because I think if you add the two of them, just with the other pieces they have, adding them both probably not as starters, just adding them as players on this team, their rotation just gets filthy.
Yeah, you know, Hunter's kind of a lot of what they have, I think, because they have Rodney Hood, who was pretty good as a rookie. Not great, but he was pretty good when he was healthy this year. He's pretty much a one-dimensional shooting guard that can knock down three-pointers. That's a lot of what Hunter is right now. He's an okay ball handler, kind of created shots on the Sun Belt level, but he's also not very good defensively yet. He played in a zone at Georgia State where he was basically asked to just float around, kind of, and never really actually had to defend anyone. I actually asked him about that at the combine. He was like, yeah, you know, he basically said that, like, he hasn't played in a man-to-man scheme in a long time. Mm-hmm. It's because he played for his father. So he's going to be interested. I'm going to be interested to see what he's like defensively in the NBA. He's good length, though, so you would think that he might be able to figure it out. The Jazz are interesting, too, because they could conceivably look into trading this pick. And if they traded this pick, got a legit... I mean, I think they could probably go out and get a legit point guard. If you did that, you could bring along Dante Exum a little bit more slowly. You could transition Trey Burke into more of a microwave guy off the bench, which I think might end up being a little bit more his speed, even though I loved him coming out of the draft. That would be interesting to me, because if they could get like someone like Ty Lawson, even though Ty Lawson has no desire to play in Salt Lake City, apparently, that could really transform them into like a six seed.
Yeah, there's definitely an interest there, and something that I have that I'm intrigued by in this draft is the idea of guys that can handle the ball either as primary or secondaries who defend mm-hmm. twos. And so RJ Hunter is one of those guys, but the centerpiece of those is D'Angelo Russell. Yeah. And Russell, I a lot of people, it gets into one of my things about people calling guys point guards. From what I've seen defensively, he's a two, which is fine.
He's not a point guard. Yeah. I don't understand people.
So the value. Yeah, the value of him is that he can bring those primary ball handler abilities and responsibilities while not defending the position. So you can play him with one of those guys who it needs to defend ones, but it can play on or off the ball. That's why, right. You know, and we just talked about Dante Exum. Exum could be one of those guys, at least for a little while. You know, there are a ton of players around the league that fit that bill. I mean, I think of Monte Ellis as another guy like that who ideally would be defending ones, but there just aren't enough guys who have two guard plus size. You know, obviously there are a couple, LeBron, Harden, guys like that.
Yeah.
But there's an intense value for that. And with Russell, part of the reason I like him more now than I did early on the season is that if he's willing to, and it seems like he is, that he can slide into the secondary ball handler role in certain situations. Mm-hmm. That's a luxury that you for any team to have, that you have a guy who's a knockdown shooter who, when you give him the ball, can actually do something with it.
Yeah, he's very, very good at running off of screens. That's one thing that I think it's a little bit underrated about him, because, you know, there are the incredible passes, the incredible vision that he has. There's the shooting ability that, you know, it's readily apparent, and his ball handling ability, it's readily apparent, like, just from watching him. But one thing that really does get underrated is he's really good at running around baseline screens. He's really good at coming off down screens. Like, he knows exactly how to create space for himself off ball. And that profiles really well as an off guard that transitions sometimes to the lead guard responsibilities, I think. That's more what I think his role is going to be in the NBA. Like, if you can put him next to, another guy like Ty Lawson, I think would be an interesting fit next to him. He has so many different ways that he could fit a variety of teams. Like you said, defensively too, that matters just because he is going to be able to guard twos, and you are going to be able to play him with those combo guard guys. You're going to be able to play him with point guards. If he went to Minnesota, like if Minnesota went totally off board and picked him number one, that would be a tremendous fit, I think, with Ricky Rubio, Andrew Wiggins, because both of those guys are very good defensively. They could take some of the pressure off of him while he continues to get stronger. He could continue to space the floor off ball, run off of screens, like I was saying, and they could continue to run that like power wing post game that they have with Shabazz Muhammad and Andrew Wiggins. And defensively, you know, you could have him guard twos. You could switch him onto ones if there's a tough two that, you know, Ricky Rubio at 6'3", 6'4", he can probably guard a lot of twos in the NBA. So that's a tremendous fit to me too.
And you could hide him on threes periodically if it's a bigger two that you want Wiggins on.
Exactly. So that'd be a great fit to me as well. The triangle for Russell, I think, is a very good fit actually with the Knicks. Yeah, he's very good in the pick and roll, and you know, everyone says the Knicks ran more pick and roll throughout the season, but I think that eventually they do want to transition to more of a triangle under Phil Jackson. He's still going to fit that triangle mold in the same way that Kobe Bryant did. Because Kobe was a lot more of a lead ball handler, I think, than people recognize. Like, he handled the ball a lot more than Derek Fisher, obviously, whenever they were with the Lakers. And Russell can do that same stuff. He's really good at moving off ball. Like I said, he's really good spacing the floor. He's a very good passer. So you know, I don't know why people would think D'Angelo Russell can't fit the triangle at all either. I think that he's basically going to be that Swiss Army knife that fits any variety of teams in this draft.
One of the really fun dynamics with this draft, and I think about it primarily with the lottery, but it's true deeper than that, is how well a lot of these players would fit together. I think about, if you obviously the top two guys, I think, would be an amazing front-court combination, but that's cheating because that's the front two guys. But even groups like Hezonja and Justice Winslow, I think that would be a really fun combination. Yeah. Kaminsky with a lot of the different guys, Kaminsky, Willie Cauley-Stein, Kaminsky, Portis, yep. You know, you go in a lot of different directions. And the sad thing for me is that no team, because what happened with the Sixers, no team really has that ability right now, though obviously you could trade into it.
Yeah, you know, that's really a fun point. If you look at Jahlil Okafor, if you could pair him with like Miles Turner even, that would be an incredible, incredible matchup. If you could pair, oh man, there's so many of those here. You're totally right. And I do wish that more teams had multiple picks in this draft. The Lakers, luckily, are one of those teams. I'm not really a Lakers fan. I live in Los Angeles, so it makes my life more fun if they're relevant. But the Lakers, you know, they have 27. If you could go out and get Jahlil Okafor or if you could go out and get Jahlil Okafor and then you try and pair him with someone ridiculous like Robert Upshaw. I don't know. Like, just try and have all of the floor protection, like have all of the rim protection that you could possibly desire. That would be fun to me. Just go super, super big and just see what happens.
One guy that played with a lot of elite talent and suffered for it in terms of his own stock, but I'm having trouble placing him in the NBA, is Trey Lyles. Mm-hmm. He's definitely a good player. I see that. But what I have trouble with, and you probably have a better idea of it, is what his NBA skills are going to be. What's going to be his calling card as a professional?
So, yeah, he's in kind of that same boat as Sam Decker, where the idea of his skill set is a little bit better than the reality right now. Lyles, he has potential to be a shooter, but he was also one of the worst shooters, catch and shoot this year in the NCAA, among guys that had 40 shots. He has potential to be a decent defender of fours, but he didn't really get a chance to do that this year because he played out of position at the three. He's a very good mover off ball. You can just watch him. He understands exactly how to get open and how to find his own shot. And that's something that tends to translate really well. Guys that know how to play the game of basketball tend to succeed in the NBA. They're smarter guys, even though he might be a little bit athletically limited. He's not super athletically limited. He moves well laterally, but he's not necessarily an upwardly explosive athlete. Those kind of guys do tend to translate even without the superior athleticism. I think he's definitely a four. I think that for him to succeed, he is going to have to be something of a stretch four, which means just continuing to improve the consistency of his jump shot. I think he was only around like maybe 0.7 points per shot this year on catch and shoots, and that's a little bit terrifying. Part of that is because he took a lot of long twos. He needed to step back and try and get into that three-point range a little bit more. He needs to understand how valuable that is. But I think that's something that comes along with time. You continue to get better at it, and you continue to expand your range, get more comfortable where you get comfortable. I think that if he can do that, he probably will be a solid NBA player, could even turn into an NBA starter. Like in the, I don't know about David West mold, because I don't know that he'll ever be that physical defensively, but he could turn into something resembling that on offense.
The guy that I think about, and I think you have him going there in the draft, I think about Portis as being kind of a David West type player.
Yeah, I've been comparing those two pretty regularly, actually. Portis is a little bit bigger. He's like 6'11". But he plays with that same edge. Like, there is nobody that plays angrier in this draft than Bobby Portis, and I absolutely love that. He is an MF-er on the court, like in every way, shape, and form of the word. He plays so hard. He's going to get down and really defend you on the perimeter. He's going to force guys. Like, he forced Karl Towns away from the bucket on post-ups this year with relative ease when those two teams played. And that's not an easy thing to do, given that Karl Towns is a 6'11", 250-pound beast. With Portis, he's not the most explosive guy. He only had, like, a 31-inch vertical at the combine. That's a little bit scary. It probably limits his value to an extent, but I can't see a way that he fails in the NBA. That's why I think I have him a little bit higher than most people do on my board. I have him at 12. like I said, I can't see a way that he fails. He's going to work so hard. He's a perfect fit in the modern NBA because he can really step away and shoot. He only shot like 40 or so threes this year, but he shot them at like a 42% clip. That holds up from last season when he shot really well from the mid-range. So yeah, I'm a very big Bobby Portis fan. I think that he is going to be very, very successful in the NBA, pretty much wherever you put him. You can put him at the four, you can probably play him a little bit at the five, and he's just going to fit so many different situations that it's going to work out well for him, I think.
Yeah, he's definitely an exciting player to add into the league. And another guy who fits that bill for me, if you want to use the word caping, I've been caping for him for years, is Mario Hezonja. And Hezonja, the parallel that I've been making since, I think since 2011, maybe 2012, because he was on Zagreb with Saric in 2011, is to me, he's a lot like J.R. Smith. And yeah. People can think about that a lot of different ways. And a lot of the positives of J.R. Smith and a lot of the negatives are in Hezonja.
Yeah.
But what I like to say about that is, if we got another try at a guy like JR with his physical talent, I think he'd probably turn into a better overall player than what JR did. And that's a testament to his talent. I'm not trying to make that a dig on JR. It's just that's how prodigiously gifted he was as a basketball player.
Yeah, JR Smith was 100% a all-star level talent, like in every regard. People that forget that, probably a little bit short-sighted, I think.
Yeah, and I mean, he's a guy who has the athleticism to defend two positions, you know, can dunk, can shoot threes, and can be such a huge part. And what's exciting in a way about Hezonja is that it looks like he's going to be going in a little bit lower in the draft, which means that he can get into a better situation. And with him, I think the surrounding talent in the system is going to be so important for how his first contract goes.
Yeah, I agree with that. He's a guy that I think could go anywhere from like number three to number eight. Like, it wouldn't even surprise me if like the 76ers were just like, because Sam Hinkie's going to take the best guy, like the guy he thinks is the best at number three. And if he rated Hezonja at number three, it would not shock me at all. If he ended up passing below seven or eight, I'd be surprised. He's a terrific talent. You're absolutely right. He's like around a 40%, 39% three-point shooter over the last 2 years. He really gets out in transition. He's physically ready right now. Like, he's 6'7.5", 218, 220 pounds. Like, he's a big dude and he's strong. Like, you're going to be able to plug him in immediately and play him without really any real concern, I think. The concerns happen whenever he starts going into Mario Hezonja, I think I am the best player on the floor mode. Sometimes that's okay. Sometimes it's not okay. Sometimes he just goes nuts and does J.R. Smith things like you alluded to. And the question with him is just going to be, like you said, can he find the right situation that will maybe try and tone down some of those tendencies? I don't necessarily know what that situation is. Maybe the Magic, where they'd have Elfrid Payton handling the ball a lot more. You'd have all of that young talent. And it seems like they have a lot of high character talent down there too. I know that Aaron Gordon, Victor Oladipo, both of those guys are very well renowned as high character guys. That could be an interesting fit, you know, seven.
I can tell you where I want him. Miami.
Miami would be very fun too. That would be a very, very good fit. He would have, Goran Dragic to kind of take him under the ropes a little bit. Plus, you'd have Chris Bosh and Dwayne Wade to help him out a lot, too. I doubt that he gets to 10, but maybe Miami tries to move up a little bit and goes to maybe number 8. If he falls to number 8, that would be interesting. So, yeah, no, I'm totally with you. I think Hezonja could either be an all-star or he could be, like, Croatian Nick Young. So, I don't see a lot of in-between there either with them.
What, no matter what, he should be in the League Pass commercials for next year, assuming he comes over. Just because he's going to be that guy, at least for me. And something that I love, and we see this with a couple of the European players in this draft, is that they've been playing against high-level competition for a long time. I mean, Hezonja is a guy, he's been with Barcelona since 2012. I think he played in his first EuroLeague in 2012 as well.
Even Zagreb's not, like, bad.
Yeah. And Porzingis has been playing against quality competition for a few years too. And that also goes along with a guy that you brought up a great point on Twitter a couple days ago, and something that I've been leaning on a little bit too, is that Emmanuel Mudiay is not Dante Exum in this guy that scouts haven't seen. He played in American high school. And he would have played in American college had a few things happened differently.
Do you know why there were so few GMs that went over to China and saw him? Like, there's been something made of Sam Hinkie, like, going over to China and seeing him. Like, he was the only GM that did it. Do you know why so few GMs did it?
Because they'd already seen him.
Yeah. Like, they've seen him enough. They don't need to waste the expenses to go over to China and see him. They don't need to waste their time to see him. They already have him scouted well.
Yeah, and I'm fascinated with him because his physical talent is off the charts, but to me, he also seems like a good basketball player, too. He's not one of those guys who's just the athlete, but it is going to take him a little while to adjust, for sure, but that's true of any super young point guard.
Yeah, no, I think that actually the Chinese League probably helped him a little bit in that regard, because the Chinese League is very renowned for being highly physical, and he is a very physical player in general. He's like massive. He's 6'5", 200 pounds, long wingspan. He can kind of bully his way past a lot of guys. But the thing is, he also has a tremendous skill level. He has a great feel in the pick and roll. The thing that he is best at right now is getting his defender. He's great at turning the corner and then getting his defender on his back on the pick and roll, and then being able to like kind of scope out shooters or decide to take a little floater, decide to go all the way to the rim. Like, his ability to make decisions there is like, it's incredible. Sometimes he makes a poor decision in going for the home run, fancy pass, like behind the back, like goofy stuff like that, like any young player does. But the thing that I've been comparing Emmanuel Mudiay to is imagine a pass first Tyreke Evans. He's that same kind of athlete, because Tyreke's a very, very good athlete, very physical athlete, very strong athlete, very long athlete. He's not in the explosive mode of your John Walls, your Russell Westbrooks, but he's in that very strong, very, very quick athlete, mode of Tyreke Evans. And imagine, if you could, what Tyreke would be like if he was a pass first lead guard. That's basically what I think Emmanuel Mudiay is.
And defensively, he can probably defend ones and twos, as far as I can tell.
Yeah, he's 6'5", 6'8", and a half. The defensive intensity wavers, as it does with a lot of these guys, but eventually I think if he really focuses down and really, really clamps down on that end and decides to give effort, like if he was in a playoff game, I think it would be fine. I think that he could be a guy you could pair with a lot of those smaller combo guards, like a Lou Williams, for instance, that is very explosive offensively and should be guarding ones. So yeah, no, I really like Emmanuel Mudiay. He's the number three player on my board. I actually have him a little bit ahead of Russell. If I was the Knicks and he's sitting there at number four, I would take him without hesitation and just mold my offense around it. Like I wouldn't sit there and be like, oh, we want to run the triangle and he's a bad fit for the triangle. I would change my offense to fit him.
So would I. And also, if you think about Carmelo Anthony as eventually becoming a four, which I think is going to happen, especially with his physical issues, a 1-4 pick and roll with those two guys would just be devastating.
Yeah, absolutely. It would be. I'm a little bit less sold on that happening just because it seems like they're set on signing Greg Monroe, which I don't think that you can play him and Monroe at 4-5. I think that you're going to want to get a sleeker, quicker four that can...
Or Cauley Stein.
Yeah, I mean, I think Cauley Stein would be a tremendous fit for this team if they could find a way to move back. Like, I don't like him at four, but if they could move back, that would be intriguing to me. Maybe get, like, a couple of extra assets. That's not really... The problem is it's not really ideal. Like, it's very hard to move back in the draft. There have been, like, two or three teams in the last decade that have moved back from a top five pick. And neither of them really got anything of value, I believe.
Yeah, what you're praying for is that one of the teams in like the 6 to 8 range has fallen in love with whoever the fourth guy is. And that's certainly possible. I mean, it hurts them that it's probably going to be a guard, so that means a team like the Pistons are probably out of it. It could happen. And...
But if you're Charlotte, for instance, I really like Emmanuel Mudiay there because you could play Kemba with him, I think.
Yeah,
you could play Kemba off ball. If you could convince Kemba to really hone in on his catch and shoot ability, he's a good shooter, not an elite one yet. If you could really focus Kemba in on improving as a catch and shoot player, that could be devastating, I think.
Yeah, that's an interesting fit. I hadn't really considered that. I'm just scared that Mudiay is going to go to Orlando and they're just going to build an entire team full of guys that can't shoot. And Channing Frye.
the scary thing is I think that they're probably going to take Justice Winslow because he fits their MO. Like, he's high character guy, potential to shoot, not really there yet. He shot like 40% from three this year, but you know, it's a slow shot. The mechanics aren't terrific yet. He's good. He's a good shooter, not a great one. But high character, high defensive value, crazy athlete. You know, he fits exactly what Rob Hennigan likes. Elfrid Payton, Aaron Gordon, Victor Oladipo, Mo Harkless. They got Mo Harkless in the Philly trade with Bynum and Dwight Howard. Like, there's so many guys that, like, fit into that MO that Rob Hennigan likes. I think that that's probably going to be their pick.
Well, and that's what frustrates me so much about the Magic is they have so many guys I like that I don't like together.
Yeah, I agree.
It would just get worse with Justice Winslow.
Yeah, like, I don't even love the Elfrid Payton, Victor Oladipo backcourt.
I specifically don't, because Payton, I mean, there are lots of things to like about him. I was low on him as a prospect because in today's NBA, it's really hard to have a perimeter player who can't shoot.
Yeah, I had him, like, in the low 20s last year, actually. I was extremely low on him. He wildly overachieved compared to what I thought he would be in the NBA, just because I guess I somewhat underestimated his athleticism. When you can get into the lane like he can, and when you can defend like he can, I think that you're going to be okay. But not everyone can be the John Wall model of point guard. Like, the returns on that type of player diminish rapidly.
Especially when you get more of them in the league.
Yeah, exactly. I don't think Moutier really fits into that realm because he has defensive versatility and that he can guard ones and twos. He has better shooting mechanics overall. Like, his shot isn't broken like Elfrid Payton's is. And the other thing is, Payton improved a lot as a shooter at the rim throughout his rookie season. He was very, very good at finishing at the rim in college. But he needs, that's his next spot where he needs to improve and go from being, you know, in that Ricky Rubio class of point guards to maybe a better one. If he can become like a 60% shooter at the rim, that would be very big for him.
Yeah, it definitely would be. One thing that I've been thinking about in this draft is, it's kind of comparing guys in different years, is on overall defensive potential, where would you put Cauley-Stein relative to Nerlens Noel?
Oh, see, it's tough because of their age difference. I want to say that Nerlens was 2 years younger than Willie coming into the draft.
Well, yeah, because they played together at Kentucky, right?
Yeah, they're in the same class, actually, of freshmen, like a high school class,
yeah,
is the best way to put it. Willie, I would say, is more polished and a little bit better. I think he's a better prospect coming in, but the age difference obviously makes up for some of that. He's not the same turnover forcer that Nerlens is. Nerlens is just like, he wreaks havoc with his arms. He's very active. He has active hands. Willie's not that. Willie is more of your Tyson Chandler type defender where he can literally stay in front of anyone. Like, if you watch that play at the end of the Notre Dame game where he stayed with Jaren Grant like 93 feet down the floor, it was remarkable, to be honest. He's that kind of guy that will stay with you no matter what, but he's not necessarily going to force turnovers either. He's a good shot blocker, and that will help. That will help in that regard. But he's not really going to be a guy that gets steals. Not going to be really a guy that you know, forces turnovers. He'll force bad shots though, and that's a little bit more important in my opinion. So I would say Willie's a little bit better than Nerlens was coming into the league. They're probably about on the same level though, as far as prospects, just because age difference matters at that point.
Oh yeah, it really does, and what I like about Cauley-Stein is he's a very different defensive player, and it'll take a little bit to get to use him, but I think that in a team concept, especially if he can stay with the same franchise for a little while, I think they'll figure out what he can do so well and mm-hmm. utilize that. I mean, in some ways, it's harder than a guy like Gobert, because Gobert is just like, okay, you protect the rim, that's what you do.
Yeah.
But at the same time, that versatility makes him really intriguing, and also it opens up another world of possibilities because you can play him with a lot of different guys. I mean, you think about, you know, maybe even somebody like Kaminsky or Porzingis, again talking about guys who fit with guys in the same draft. But you could also one thing that I've been on, I have tweeted out like 2 weeks ago, and I've been saying it for a while, is I think it'd be really fun to see Cauley Stein with DeMarcus Cousins, and you have him with him right now in the mock. While there are offensive limitations, I think that a lot of those go away because of how monstrous DeMarcus is.
Yeah, I agree with that. I'm a little bit worried about the fit with Rudy Gay. I think it might... The scary thing with that is it might turn Rudy Gay into Toronto Rudy Gay, where he started to settle for jumpers a little bit more.
Yeah, I don't think you worry about that as much, though. I think you're building around Cauley Stein and Cousins as opposed to Rudy Gay.
I don't know that I agree with that, because they just signed Rudy Gay to that extension, and they have him for at least 3 more years, I know that. So to an extent, you kind of are building around Rudy Gay, though. Like, regardless of, like, our opinions on what Rudy Gay is, Sacramento seems committed to him to a point. So I think that that's a little bit scary, and that you might turn Rudy Gay into the worst version of Rudy Gay again, where he has very little value as a floor spacer. But again, Cauley Stein's defensive ability next to Cousins is just terrific. It's incredible. He'd be able to do exactly what Cousins can't do, and Cousins would actually accentuate him really well in the post, because Cousins is a very, very good post defender. Just because he's so big, he's so long, he's able to push guys off the spot. And if you had a big center that you struggle with in the post, you could put Cousins on him. If there's a floor spacing five that Cousins can't guard, you could put Cauley Stein on him. So that fits terrific, I think. It would be incredible. Yeah, there are offensive limitations, but you can work around those. You could put Cousins in the post and put Cauley Stein as like your designated screener on the perimeter. And yeah, they might not totally respect him, and it might not pull a guy away from like the 12-foot range in the lane. But at the same time, if you have a good guard, if they could find a way to get a decent point guard that could, you know, force that guy to make a decision, force Cauley Stein's defender to make a decision, that would matter, I think, and that would be a tremendous fit.
Yeah, I'm definitely on board. Let's move outside the lottery a little bit. And what players outside of that, speaking more to what the guys that you like, do you think are maybe underrated, or that you particularly like in that, you know, let's say 15 to 30, or if you want to go deeper, if there's a guy you really like in the 40s, fine.
15 to 30 range right now. I might be a little bit higher on Montrezl Harrell than some. I think that he communicates really well defensively. He's going to be able to guard most fours, some fives. Just because he's so strong and he's very long. His standing reach, despite only being 6'7"-ish, 6'8"-ish, he has a 9'1" standing reach, so you're probably going to be able to play him on some fives at least. And he's very good on the perimeter. He moves well. He was able to switch on to Justice Winslow multiple times in their games this year against Duke, and he was totally okay with that. Another guy that is – the guy that might be the most intriguing guy for me in this entire thing is Christian Wood. Because he's a 6'11" power forward with tremendous athleticism and tremendous length. He has 9'3" standing reach, 7'3" wingspan. And he, you know, used it this year for UNLV. He blocked shots really well. He rebounds really well. He averaged a double-double. He's a very good slasher out of the mid-range. He has jump shot mechanics that you can work with and try to improve. Like, he could go anywhere from 14 to 28. And I wouldn't say that it was out of place, depending on the situational fit. Like, he's a guy that's very interesting to me. And another guy that I've totally done an about face on is Terry Rozier. If he can play point, and it looked like at the combine that he probably could due to the increased space around the 3-point line and in the mid range, he's not the guy with the best vision, but he looks for passes basically. And it looks like the increased space has helped him find guys better from the spot up spots, from 3-point range on the wing and the corner, etc. And he's a guy that's going to be able to get into the lane regardless. He's a tremendous athlete. I like him more and more as a sixth man type that you can play at ones at the one or the two. And he has tremendous heart. He's a good kid. He's going to defend his ass off. So he's a guy that I had like in the 50s or 60s. To start the year, and I've done a total about face. I have him in the first round right now. I really like him.
Yeah, I haven't seen much of Wood, but what I've seen, I've liked. And the guy for me in that range, and you can talk about Pac-12 bias considering I live on the West Coast and went to UCLA, but Rondae Hollis-Jefferson. To me, he's the best perimeter defender in this class.
I agree with that.
And if you're the best perimeter defender in this in a class like this, which has plenty of good players, then I think there's value with that. I don't think, you know, that he's going to be that, you know, dominant, you know, I don't think he's going to be Scottie Pippen or anything like that, because Pippen's offensive game was so remarkable, but there is an intense value in the NBA to a guy who can do that at the small forward position. And I think he can defend twos, threes, and fours. If you can make a guy that makes Kevin Durant's life hell for a game, that's worth it. For a playoff series, that's worth it.
Yes. Yeah, I totally agree with that. He's 6 foot seven, 7'2" wingspan. He's going to be able to play forward sometimes. He does need to fill out his body a little bit more. He's only around 210 pounds right now, but that'll happen. If he gets up to like the 225, 230 range, just by the time he continues to get into shape and fill out as a 20-year-old does by the time he turns 25. He's a guy that I think could make an early impact in the NBA. He's in that range of guys that are all the rage in the NBA right now. Those, you know, 6'8" to 6'6" shooting guard, small forward, power forward guys that are very versatile and can defend a lot of positions. Like the Bucks have a seeming like plethora of them that can do all of this. Like it's the reason Chris Middleton is so valuable right now. He's able to guard three different positions and shoot. If Rondé can get any sort of a semblance of a jump shot, he's going to be incredible.
And there are a lot of teams that I love him on, but the one of a team down there that would just be ridiculous. I always say this with the Spurs, but I think for Rondé, going to the Warriors would be an unbelievable situation because he would be the eventual replacement for Andre Iguodala.
Yeah, the Warriors would be a very good fit. The Grizzlies, imagine him in the grit and grind. That would just be very fun, I think.
Or with LeBron.
That would be intriguing. I don't think that they would go that route because I think that they really, really want spacing from their small forward, shooting guards, like all of that. So I think they might be more interested in someone like a Justin Anderson, even though Anderson's shot is a little bit wonky to begin with, even though he shot 48% this year. That's an inflated number a little bit. But he still shows a lot more potential to shoot the ball, and I think that would matter to the Cavs. But yeah, Rondé's going to be an NBA player. He could be a guy that we look at, you know, next season and be like, oh, how did that guy go number 21? Like we were doing early this year with KJ McDaniels, just because he plays early. And then, you know, like 5 years down the road, we're like, you know, that makes a little bit more sense. He never really developed beyond like a terrific defender. But yeah, he's going to be a guy that I think could make an immediate impact in the NBA, and it wouldn't surprise me at all.
Yeah, I just think that he has that. And also, another guy we talked about a little bit with Hezonja, who I think is going in the right range for that to happen. You know, he might not be one of those guys who plays a ton of minutes, but he strangely swings like a couple of games, let's say like around the trade deadline. And you're like, oh my God, I can't even remember that. Why is this guy on a team this good?
Yeah. And another guy like that's Michael Qualls from Arkansas. He's, you know, right around that 6'5", 6'6" range. He has a 7 foot wingspan. He has like an 8'8" standing reach for a guy that's that tall. Like he's tremendously long, a terrific, terrific athlete. He's going to be in that Chris Middleton mold again. He can guard twos through fours. The key with him again, jump shot. And he actually has like the semblance of a jump shot. He shot 34% over the last couple of years, and he shot quite a few threes for Arkansas. He intrigues me a lot because he cares defensively as well. Same with Norman Powell. Norman Powell's a guy that's going to figure it out, I think. He's tough. You know, he's physically tough. He's mentally tough. He really gives a damn. Like, even if he never develops into, like, a 35% three-point shooter, he's going to be a guy that you can put on ones, twos, and threes defensively and feel confident.
Yeah, and think about that. Both the two guys that went to Arkansas could be factors in this draft. I mean, not even just the SEC, but I mean, Arkansas, it's pretty remarkable.
Yeah, it is. They were very good this year. They kind of sucks for that program that they lost both of them. Qualls basically said he left because he has a kid and really wants to support his family himself now. That's just unlucky for that program. Another defensive guy that intrigues everyone, I think, is Robert Upshaw.
Yep.
I don't think anyone knows what to do with him right now. His problems are, they're bad. we'll just go with that.
But I think having him on a late first round slotted contract is actually pretty amazing, because then what you're doing is you have time to evaluate him, and at a low cost, and if it works, you get him for 4 years for really cheap.
Yeah, that's very interesting. It's just going to be whether or not you want to guarantee him that money. it might be tough to sell your owner on guaranteeing him that money. I've heard some things about what his problems are that I can't report. It's not going to be the easiest sell to your owner to get him involved, but his skill set is so tremendous that if he's over his immaturity, he's going to be a tremendous value. Like you said, he's going to be he might be a $100 million player if he's over his immaturity. He's that good of a rim protector. He averaged, I want to say, 7.4 blocks per 40. The next closest is Miles Turner at 4.7. He dwarfs people when it comes to rim protection.
And he rebounds too.
And he rebounds. Like he is a Rudy Gobert level prospect when it comes to protecting the rim. Like there's no doubt about that. It's just whether or not you can get him in the right state of mind to off the court to really make that impact on the court.
One other guy that I'm higher on, and you could put his brother in there too, but I have a really distinct feeling that Andrew Harrison is going to be a much better pro than people think. Because having him as a secondary ball handler and having him defend twos makes him so much more useful as a player than what they had him do at Kentucky, which just wasn't his skill set.
Yeah, I like him a lot more than I like his brother. I don't think his brother is an NBA player. I think Andrew is, though. Like you said, the ability to really handle the ball and to create plays for others from potentially the two guard, but even from the one guard spot, he's going to provide versatility to defend both ones and twos, and you're going to be able to play him with one of those combo guards if you really wanted to. And in all honesty, he is the size to defend threes if you really need him to. So yeah, he's a guy that I like a lot. He's another guy at the combine where it looked like the increased space from, you know, just extending the NCAA three-point line out to the NBA three-point line, it looked like it really, really helped him. He was able to find those little creeks and crevices that don't really exist in college, and they really didn't exist at Kentucky because of how big and long that team was. I like him to the point where if a team used a first-round pick on him near the end of the first round, I probably wouldn't call it a bad pick.
Yeah, I mean, you need a certain guy to put next to him. You need somebody who has a jump shot that people respect. And
yeah.
But there are plenty of those guys out there now. That isn't really an issue. And so I think that he has a place in the league. It'll be harder for Aaron, but...
Aaron's a shooting guard that can't shoot. And
exactly.
He's a shooting guard that can't shoot that doesn't understand that he can't shoot.
Yeah.
Is the biggest problem. Like, if you watched any of the combine interviews and stuff, he was just like, yeah, I think teams know that I can shoot. And talking to teams... that's not the case at all. Like, if you listen to anything the teams say, they're just like, no, he's a shooting guard that can't shoot. Like, he cares defensively. He has interesting ball skills, but he's a shooting guard that can't shoot and is like an average defender. That doesn't have a ton of value in the NBA right now.
Yeah, I definitely agree with you. It's also kind of crazy to think about how deep this Kentucky team is, that I think a lot of their second round players could do pretty well too. Dakari is an interesting player. I don't think he's the greatest prospect, but he's another guy who could fall into the right role by dropping a little bit.
I'm not real high on him. I don't know that he's an NBA player. He's a below the rim guy that he's got good standing reach. He has 9'4" standing reach, but he's below the rim player with a 9'4" standing reach. He has no athletic explosiveness. He had a 25-inch max vert. He's a guy that you have to convince to get into good shape. He came into the combine pretty overweight but a little bit big for what he was. His body fat content was a little bit higher than what was expected this year. I don't see it with him. He struggles to finish around the rim too. He struggled to do that in college, and I don't see how that's going to translate to the NBA. I think he's going to have it tough to really carve out a role in the NBA.
Yeah.
Like if you made me pick someone between him and Alan Williams from UC Santa Barbara, I trust Alan Williams to rebound and defend a little bit better than I trust Dakari to do the things that Dakari does.
The last question that I thought of, and this is a little bit off the wall, but I think it'll work, is if you could match up, skip this poll process and match up one player to a team while being realistic. So, you know, not like Karl Towns on the Cavs or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
What would you be most happy with as that one matchup?
Probably Karl Towns on the Timberwolves, a realistic fit that I think should happen. And I know that Flip Saunders has said that he's just told people around him that he likes Okafor a little bit better than Towns, but the fit there is just so tremendous with what they have already. With Ricky Rubio and with, you know, Andrew Wiggins in tow, they're going to have to find a way to space the floor somehow. And Karl Towns can do that. He'd be a guy that you could run in pick and roll settings with Rubio, and he could pop out and he could create a little bit more of a driving lane for Rubio by bringing that big man away from the rim. He'd be a guy that, because he can be out on the perimeter a little bit more, you could run that power wing post-up game with Shabazz and with Andrew Wiggins. Defensively, the Timberwolves were the worst defensive team in the NBA because they were the worst defensive team at protecting the rim in the NBA last year. They gave up 69% of their shots within 3 feet of the rim last season. That's unbelievable. I want to say the league average is 62, 63, somewhere in that range. Towns can protect the rim. He profiles well to do that. He'd fit next to any variety of their big men prospects. Like, you know, they have Gorgui Dieng. You play him. You could reasonably play him next to Dieng, I think. It might be a little bit of a struggle on the perimeter defensively, but they're both super long. So I think that would probably mitigate a bit of it. You could play him with, Adrian Payne, that'd be intriguing. You could play him with Pekovic, probably. But again, that would create a little bit of some problems, I think, defensively. And I think that Pekovic's time in Minnesota's might be running out a little bit. And then you could play him with the Serbian or Croatian guy, Nemanja Bilicka, or however you say his name. That would be an intriguing fit. Basically, any guy that they have in their front court, in their back court, he fits with. And he has legitimate all-star potential. He'd be adding to a team that has all-star potential in Andrew Wiggins already. Depending on what you think of Ricky Rubio, I probably don't think he's an all-star, but I think that he is a tremendous, tremendous role player as a point guard because he can really defend. He's probably one of the five best defenders at the position in the NBA. He has defensive versatility, and Rubio's intriguing in a lot of ways, both on-ball and off-ball, because he's a very good cutter off-ball. He's a little bit better of a catch-and-shoot guy, I guess, than I gave him credit for. I talked to Lane Bashrow of Nylon Calculus about this a little bit, and he shot something like 35, 36% off-ball from three this year, catch-and-shoot-wise. So that's interesting. But, yeah, you know, Towns is just the perfect fit for that situation. And it's really hard for me to really understand why they could pass on him.
And on top of all those good points, the Wolves will probably be one more year away from really, you know, making a push. And that means that they can add an extra quality player with the versatility to go. First of all, if they want to go heavy offensive, they can do that. But they get to add that one more piece, and then the hope would be they'll also have flexibility that next summer to spend some money. You're probably not going to be getting, you know, a high level free agent, but you can use money in a lot of other ways. And so you would be a really good fit because it would allow them to kind of crest at the right time.
Right. He fits the timeline very well. I think that I said earlier in the podcast, he might have a bit of a down rookie season just as he continues to adjust to the NBA, the quickness of it, the way that people move in the NBA and how he's not necessarily the most coordinated guy yet, even though I think he's going to develop through that phase. With Okafor, I think Okafor probably is going to be an impact player immediately. He's just so polished. And I think that his defense isn't as bad as he's gotten criticized for. I think that he's going to be at least playable. He's probably worth a couple wins to that team, honestly, if you
draft him. And he's going to get counting stats. I think Okafor has to be considered right now, before we know where guys fit, he has to be considered the favorite to win Rookie of the Year.
I would agree with that, basically 100%. I just don't see a way that Okafor doesn't develop into a 20-8 guy, something like that. Like, even if you think the rebounding never really comes along, the scoring is just that strong. He has that good of a touch. I do think the face-up shooting game will come along. He already has the face-up driving game because of his terrific ball handling ability and his touch. I think the shooting will come along. I think the free throw shooting will come along. It's not a bad stroke. He struggles with his confidence a little bit sometimes, and ends up just kind of leaving his hands high on his free throws, or, you know, not getting his lower body involved just because he doesn't want to be at the line. And I think that'll improve as he continues to get older. He has a good basis, at least, mechanically, for a jump shot to be good. So I think Towns fits better with the Timberwolves timeline. If they can go ahead and add a shooting guard next year, that would be terrific. Even though next year's draft isn't great for shooting guards, if they could find a way to do it, it would be great.
Yeah, incidentally, I think the guy who would have the best shot at unseating Okafor for Rookie of the Year would be if Russell goes to Philadelphia.
Yeah,
his counting stats would just be insane.
Yeah, any of the Philadelphia guys. Like, if you get Moutier or Russell in Philadelphia, even if you got Hezonja in Philadelphia, I think that all three of those guys would have a really really great shot to be the Rookie of the Year. But then again, if Okafor goes to the Lakers, he's going to play 30 minutes a game. So.
And everybody will see him play and all that.
Yeah, you know. The Lakers are guaranteed 25 national TV games a year. So.
Anything else you'd like to share with listeners?
No, not really. I'm pretty excited for this draft. It's going to be, I think it's a deep draft once you get down to like 25, right in that range. I think that most of those guys are going to turn into solid NBA players, solid NBA role players. And I can't really say that about most drafts. Like last year's, I didn't love that draft depth-wise. I actually liked 2013 a little bit more depth-wise, despite the obvious problems at the top. As far as talent. So yeah, I think this is going to be a solid draft depth-wise. I think it's going to be a solid solid draft overall because there's very good talent in the lottery. There's very good talent throughout the first round. I don't like any of the second round, basically. But I think that there's going to be very solid picks throughout the entire first round. And that's good because next year is planning to be a pretty bad draft.
Huh. Well, I look forward to how much fun the next month is going to be. And thanks so much for taking the time.
Yeah, anytime, Danny.
Thanks again to Sam Vecenia for taking the time to come on. You can read him at CBS Sports. He does the NBA draft, he does college basketball, and he does the NBA. You can also read him on Twitter. He's Sam_Vecenia. That's SAM_VECENIE. And also, he is doing the Amateur Hour podcast with Brian Gibberman on the Hardwood Paroxysms and Basketball Network. It's also available on iTunes. And right now, they're actually doing a mock draft, and they're going through episode by episode, going through each pick and giving each one some quality detail. So I think people who enjoy this podcast would probably enjoy that as well. So thanks again to Sam for coming on. I love talking to people who are more knowledgeable about these types of subjects than I am, especially this year. I didn't watch a ton of college hoops, had enough other things going on. And I'm always open to other guests. I mean, I was thrilled with Sam. And so if you have somebody that you'd like to come on that you think would be a good fit, you can let me know at Danny LaRoux, DannyLeroux, on Twitter, or you can email daniel.laroux@realgm.com. I promise you that I read everything and I respond to as much as I can. And also, you should check out the Dunked On Basketball podcast, which I'm frequently a part of with Nate Duncan. I've been thrilled with how well it's done so far. And if you're a fan of either podcast, one huge thing you can do is you can subscribe on iTunes, and also you can give a rating. That's something that matters in terms of getting other people to see it, you know, getting it to be more prominent. And also, you know, it's nice if you like something to do that. I'm actually starting to do more rating myself. So thank you so much for listening. Take care and make it a great day.